Beaubernard believes Las Vegas is a smart city.
So as a university professor in Las Vegas, it's my job to study Las Vegas. And what a gig that is, right? If you're the kind of person that loves to sit on the mall bench of life, like a fascinated anthropologist, and watch as the humanity strolls by, you gotta love studying the Las Vegas Laboratory. And you can study it at so many different levels. And in studying it at many levels, I've come to conclude that Las Vegas is smart.
That's Beaubernard from a TED talk he gave a little while back. And this goes against much of the conventional wisdom and most of those lists that tell us how terrible we are in so many different categories. One list published by the Daily Beast back about 3 years ago actually listed us as the dumbest city in America. On the other hand, what makes for a smart city and how do we make the cut and where do we need to improve? Well, we thought this would be a great opportunity to bring in some friends, including Beaubernard, Executive Director for the International Gaming Institute. And Bo, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And congrats on the TED appearance, by the way. That was really fun.
Thanks. It was nerve-wracking, but enjoyable.
I'll bet it was. So explain, in a nutshell, why Las Vegas really is a smart city.
So the argument here is that many of our conventional metrics of intelligence are still important, but that there are new metrics of intelligence. The science of intelligence is evolving and bending actually in the direction of Las Vegas in many ways. And this is happening at a molecular level where things called mirror neurons, which we're just starting to understand, are things that allow us to read people, which is obviously very important in our social universe, understand what they're feeling and then anticipate their needs and hopefully provide for those needs before they even know that they have that need. This is something that, of course, you have to do over and over and over in the hospitality business. This is the secret behind a good waiter or a good front desk clerk, is having really powerful mirror neurons. And the more we study neurons, the more we understand that neurons that fire together wire together, and that neurons are sort of a component of the brain that, like a muscle, gets stronger and stronger and stronger with repeated action. And when we understand neurons in this way, and we understand that in the hospitality industry, you're constantly firing these neurons, these mirror neurons that are increasingly a foundation of social intelligence, which is sort of the new way to be smart, we can start to see that there are ways in which Las Vegas is actually more intelligent than it's conventionally given credit for.
Is this a variation of the old thing of book smart versus street smart?
It is, and it resonates with a lot of us who understand and maybe have friends for whom they're high IQ types but might struggle in the social universe. Social intelligence, this work that Daniel Goleman famously has sort of launched as an entire field of study, has really come to dominate intelligence studies. And having an emotional IQ, having the ability to read people, understand their feelings, understand their needs, in many, many situations in life and in love and in business, is more intelligent than having a through-the-roof SAT score.
Also joining us is Las Vegas Review Journal columnist Steve Sebelius. Steve, welcome back.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
You've been here for many years. You've lived here for quite a while. What are some of the things you've heard over the years about people's impressions of Las Vegas?
Well, this is something you see all the time. Las Vegas markets itself as this place where you can come and engage in licentiousness and be the person that you're not allowed to be back in your hometown of Columbus, Ohio, or Nebraska or places like that, because that's just not socially acceptable there. But whenever someone curiously takes Las Vegas at its word and embraces that, there is a reaction that is just completely disproportionate to reality. I mean, you saw this with the Republican convention. It was proposed that the nominating convention for the Republican National Committee in 2016 be held here. One of the arguments against it was, well, Las Vegas just isn't family friendly. I mean, look at all the things that go on there, the drinking, the women, sin that's happening there. And Las Vegas got offended. In fact, some of the people who we pay millions of dollars to create that image took offense to that characterization, when all the people were really doing was responding to the message that we're constantly putting out. So I guess what I would say is you can't be offended if you constantly tell people you are a party town, and then someone takes you at your word and assumes that you are a party town. You can't be offended by that.
Well, apropos those mirror neurons that Bo was talking about just a moment ago, I mean, what's your response to Bo Bernard's claim that Las Vegas is in fact a smart city?
Well, I would say I'm probably more in tune with the more traditional measures of of intelligence. I recently took for the Clark County School District gives its many of its employees a test that shows their thinking tendencies, basically, and divides it up into different colors. I scored very high on the analytical and structural thinking, but very low, in fact, the lowest, on the social thinking. So I don't think that I have a very good or high social intelligence or emotional IQ level. Perhaps I don't have those mirror neurons.
So you just weren't firing. Not cut out for the service economy.
Not cut out for the hospitality industry. Either on you know the end that deals with the customers, or on what I would argue where some of our real intelligence is at the higher levels, where you have the people like Steve Wynn who conceive of these things. I mean, no one had thought of a mega resort before he thought of a mega resort. Nobody thought to put high end luxury before he did that with the Bellagio. So we do have examples of people who are very smart and very innovative.
But overall, are you saying we take this with a grain of salt?
Well, overall, we should take it with a grain of salt, I think, because I mean, let's be honest about what we've done here. We have created what is possibly the most expensive, most technologically advanced tourist trap that's ever been created. And we have some very wealthy carnival barkers who have done that. But strip away a lot of the pretense, and that's essentially what we've done.
Cindy Reed is with us, too. She is the arts and entertainment editor for Vegas 7. Cindy, welcome back. Great to have you here with us again.
Thank you very much.
All right. You're relatively new to town. What do you make as you look around? I mean, what do you think? How would you define a smart city?
You know, I've actually been here nearly 7 years now, so I don't know how new that is.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a good point.
One thing is it's a very transient city, hence 7 years is like makes me an old timer. I think one of the things is that if you want to commit to a city, that's when you get the real cultural stuff, people who are willing to stay here and invest in the things that are traditional markers of intelligence, like, you know, building the Smith Center, something like that. Its existence makes us a quote-unquote smarter city. And yet you have that, and then there's no art museum. And when you look at the recent effort to create an art museum, you know, the money's not there. And I think that's due to some of the transience.
So are the museums and things like that some of the markers when you talk about the intelligence of a community?
I mean, I think if you want to use the definition, a very narrow definition of social intelligence, then once you've created the definition, sure, intelligence fits a very narrow definition that, you know, you've created. If it's only mirror neurons, sure, we are a hospitality city. But once you have that, then you have to kind of look for more. Once you really want to live here and think about creating a life here, you need all kinds of intelligence. And I think we have our niche and we fill it. And sometimes it's harder to fill other niches that perhaps other cities fill.
Also with us is Matt O'Brien, author of Beneath the Neon and My Week at the Blue Angel. Matt, welcome back. It's great to have you with us again. You've seen some of the darker side of Las Vegas. And I guess when you hear something like Beau Bernard's presentation and someone saying that this is a smart city, what's the first thing that crosses your mind?
I think it goes back to what you said about book smart versus street smart, because I think Steve is in the minority here in Vegas in that he's book smart and maybe not so much street smart. But what I found, especially, you know, with the people on the street here that I've interviewed for my books, is that, you know, a lot of these people don't have a high school degree, much less a college degree, but they know how to survive. They know how to make money. They know how to live, even if it's pulling a mattress into a storm drain and using a milk crate as a coffee table. So I see a lot of resourcefulness here, a lot of, social intelligence as opposed to academic intelligence.
So, Beau Bernard, is social intelligence enough? Or does a city to be vibrant in the 21st century need academic intelligence as well?
It's clearly not enough. The champions of social intelligence wouldn't suggest as much. It's reminiscent when I'm confronted with these sorts of conversations. It's reminiscent of the same conversations I have on campus. A number of folks, when you tell them you're a university professor, they say, "Oh dear, I'm so sorry. You have to deal with the kids these days, and they're slackers, and they're completely uninvolved politically. My folks' generation says things like, of course, when we were on campus, we were marching on Washington, and now there are no marches. Well, if you think about the ways in which political science has changed and the sort of political community has changed, in many ways our older generations, to invoke my folks for a moment, are focusing the TV lenses on the marches and seeing the streets are empty, and they're missing the blogosphere. They're missing the ways in which Twitter has become a political tool. And I think it's the same with intelligence. We were all raised sort of understanding IQ. Most of us went to school in an era in which IQ and conventional metrics, SAT scores, you heard Steve invoke, these kinds of metrics of intelligence were super important. It's not that they're unimportant still. It's just that our understanding is evolving, and we're training our lenses on yesterday's metrics while missing out on the evolution of our understanding.
So is there a way to use social intelligence to build academic intelligence?
It's a good question, and one that we struggle with, I think, on university campuses. We're still stuck, if I can be self-critical, in a mode of lecturing that was invented hundreds of years ago. And in many ways, we're struggling with these sorts of approaches to teaching and encouraging multiple forms of intelligence. I come from a family of teachers. My family goes back three generations in the Clark County School District as teachers, and I have teachers on both sides of my family. These are the kinds of sort of, we call them pedagogical is the horrible academic word, right? But how you teach is a crucial question. And these are the kinds of debates that I've been having with my family for years and years and years. And I worry sometimes that we're stuck in a conventional way of teaching and reaching students while they themselves have evolved and grown.
I alluded to the Daily Beast list from a few years ago. It's based on education levels and intellectual vitality. And I guess if we look at education first, we've got one of the biggest school districts in the country, but it's still one of the worst for graduation rates and for per pupil funding. And it sounds, Val Bernard, as though you're kind of halfway saying that we may not have a strong school system, but that's okay because the social intelligence compensates for that, maybe more than compensates for that. But are we settling for less?
We shouldn't. I've dedicated my career to the public school system here and believe very much in trying to make that as competitive as possible. I'm a proud product of the Clark County School District. I graduated from Bonanza High School across the parking lot here and Garside Junior High before that. I believe that those of us that were raised in Las Vegas of a generation ago grew up in a very strong Clark County School District. I believe that those of us that now work in the district and that work in our public higher education system are working very hard to maintain that status. I believe as a sociologist that there are sociological winds of change that have led to very significant challenges for us who are trying to just at least maintain and tread water as it pertains to educating Nevada citizens. But it's not that it's unimportant. It's that, again, there are new ways of understanding intelligence that hopefully will incorporate into our educational systems.
So Steve Sebelius, with those new ways of understanding intelligence, are jobs like concierge, bartender, cleaning personnel, casino game operators, are they respectable? And are we insulting these people when we say we should be pushing our kids to something more?
Well, no, of course they're respectable. That was one of the things that I found curious. One of the defenses that was mounted in the wake of the attack on Las Vegas because of the convention was former Governor Bob List, who said, listen, we're not all, bartenders and cocktail waitresses. There's also school teachers and nurses and doctors, as if those professions were somehow, more noble or separate and apart from the things that we do in the hospitality industry were dirty or somehow less worthy of respect. Listen, those are jobs. Those people make up the community and the life that is Las Vegas. So we shouldn't diminish, what they do. There are people who would argue, look, the great State Senator Joe Neal, civil rights pioneer in this state, who once said so famously, the gaming industry's only product is an empty pocket. There is this notion that we're not manufacturing anything. Our largest industry doesn't produce anything. But I think, the mirror side to that is what we produce is this experience of coming to Las Vegas, which relies very heavily on this emotional intelligence and on people having their needs met. That's why they keep coming back. That's why they wait in traffic for 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours driving from California, time after time. I mean, I would get caught in that once and never again. But there are people come time after time. They're coming here for something. And it's not a cheap buffet. It's in the experience of a Las Vegas. And these people who whose job it is to make that industry, they make that all happen.
So, Cindy Reed, is it smart to say skip college, skip the mountains of debt that'll be piling up, you know, while you're learning all these things? And think about something like saying maybe going for a high-paying job in the hospitality industry here.
One of my great regrets in life is not, when I was 22 years old, cashing in as a swimming pool cocktail waitress. I could have a house right now. I could have a nice car. And
you went for the degree instead.
I mean, I think that we're the last stand for the American dream, you know, and that's a great thing. So I'm a real believer in people should do what makes them happy, and people should do what works for them. And, you know, if a degree is right for you, it's right for you. But there's no reason to do it just for the sake of doing it.
You actually faced that choice a few years ago. What would you, someday down the road, what would you tell your daughter or your granddaughter who might face that same sort of choice?
Study math.
Study math.
So you can make change. When you serve those cocktails.
Today it is What's on Your Mind, kind of a Las Vegas smarts edition of What's on Your Mind. We're joined by Las Vegas Review-Journal columnist Steve Sebelius, Cindy Reed, arts and entertainment editor with Vegas 7, Matt O'Brien, author of numerous books, including Beneath the Neon, Life and Death in the Tunnels of Las Vegas, and Beau Bernard, executive director for the International Gaming Institute at UNLV. And we're asking some questions about the idea of Las Vegas being a smart city. Bernard made that claim during a TED Talk. And we'd like to know what you think. Is Las Vegas a smart city? Is it academic smarts? Is it social intelligence, book smart, street smart? How do you define a smart city? And if Las Vegas isn't one yet, what must we do to become one? And also, is it okay to say to our kids, nothing wrong with setting college aside, working maybe as a car dealer, bartender, cocktail server? Call us. Join our conversation. What's on your mind? 702-258-3552 is our number. 702-258-3552. We're on Twitter at KNPR News. And, of course, we're online. You can send us an email anytime at knprnews.org. The Daily Beast's list of smart cities included sort of the usual suspects, places like Boston, San Francisco, Hartford, Denver. Another of the metrics they used to come up with a list was how many citizens had bachelor's and master's degrees. The smartest cities, as expected, have got lots more diplomas and such. So, Beau Bernard, why is having more emotional intelligence better for us in Southern Nevada than maybe promoting more students to reach for that next degree?
Well, clearly we should do both, right? It doesn't have to be an either-or claim. And I lived in Boston for 4.5 years, went to college there, interacted with a fantastic college community that I hope we are growing towards over on Maryland Parkway at UNLV. But the reason for being able to be emotionally intelligent, being socially intelligent, is you can respond to the world better. When you think about it from an evolutionary biology perspective, the most important way to be smart is to be adaptable. To an evolutionary biologist, adaptability is intelligence. And what city in the world has been more adaptable, more ready to change, more rapidly evolving? As Steve noted, people are waiting 8 hours on I-15 to get here. And when they arrive here, they find a rapidly evolving product. It's really products that have been invented and reinvented. Las Vegas has long been known as the reinvention capital of America. What's reinvention? It's adaptability. From an evolutionary standpoint, if your species recognized once the ice was coming, oh, crap, ice, right? And you're able to recognize that and work together and work socially with others. Those were the species that did really well during things like ice ages. Now, again, Las Vegas has been through its own ice age of late, and it's certainly debatable the degree to which we responded to it intelligently, this great recession that we've just been through and are still struggling to emerge from. But again, from an evolutionary biology perspective, to oversimplify in a way, it's places like Las Vegas that survive. And when we look at the news out of Atlantic City just today, it's places like Atlantic City that don't reinvent and for whatever reason, that die, that struggle. Atlantic City dying while Las Vegas is continuing to flourish.
So what are they failing to do that we're doing well?
Again, I think it's that ability to adapt. And another way in which Las Vegas has evolved is macroeconomic in nature. As Steve noted, the great Joe Neal quote, and on all the different folks who have opined on Las Vegas and noted that our product is really a tourist trap. Global GDP today, 10% of all of the dollars, yen, euros spent on the planet, 10% of those dollars today, tourism. The tourism capital of the world is Las Vegas, the single place that attracts more people who vote with their feet in a way by coming to Las Vegas every year, 40 million people. Las Vegas wins in that election, right? And it used to be that we sort of dismissed tourism as an industry that was sort of superfluous. But once it becomes such a huge chunk of a global economy, more of and a global population, more of whom are able to up and move themselves from wherever they are to another place, tourism becomes, you know, right or wrong, or superficial or not, a huge chunk of the global economy. And Las Vegas has become, I've said, the Houston of the gaming industry, in the same way that Houston is the global energy capital, even though oil has moved from literally beneath its feet to becoming a global product. The Houston skyscrapers continue to dictate what's become a global energy economy. And in much the same way, and not so much our skyscrapers because those are hotels, but in the bowels beneath those hotel rooms in Las Vegas, the decisions are made that drive a global tourism industry.
Now, Steve Sebelius, does that sense of reinvention, the evolutionary biology that Bo Burnett's talking about, is that at loggerheads with the idea of achieving with education? Or can they, as Bo seems to be suggesting, ideally go hand in hand?
Well, yeah, no, I think they can go hand in hand. You know, is it a measure of a smart city to do what we have done with education? You know, to consistently underfund education and then constantly worry, you know, why are we not achieving? What's wrong here? Why can't our teachers perform better? The answer is right there in front of us. When we propose solutions, you know, we hear nothing except for why we can't do that or why we can't do this other thing. I don't think it's very smart of us as a city to say, listen, if we raise taxes, then we will drive businesses out and we won't have any jobs, when we have the second highest unemployment rate in the nation still and no taxes. So that makes no sense. But very few people stop to say, wait a second, what you're saying makes no sense. And we've got to do something different about this. We have to invest in education a little bit more. That is the only economic development plan that's ever going to do anything. We've created this elaborate state economic development plan that has all these different sectors, and we want medical research, and we want more high tech like switch. We want drone research and all these other things. But the key to getting there is what it has always been and what it'll always be, which is investing in that K-12 education and investing in higher education, getting UNLV to a tier one research university, all of those things. And that is but that takes work and that takes investment. And I wonder sometimes about the commitment of the community to do that.
Matt O'Brien, speaking of the community, there have been some very, very successful people. Bernard was naming Steve Wynn. There are others, Sheldon Adelson and quite a few others in the hospitality industry. On the other hand, it hasn't necessarily translated to everybody in the Las Vegas community. And is there a better way to, in effect, to spread the wealth, you know, in a place of high unemployment like Las Vegas?
Yeah, I think so. And what a lot of people say is that actually the casinos need to do a little bit more. As far as, you know, the gaming tax goes, I think it's at 6.75%. of the gross revenue that remains in the state. A small percentage of that goes to education. You guys are probably familiar with Chip Mosier, who used to write for City Life about education. That was one thing he harped on quite a bit, is if we could get more of that money that the casinos make here, that they're so good at attracting all this money to stay in the state and to go towards education, that could be part of fixing the problem. And I think it's also interesting to note, you had talked about how we're good at hospitality, casino management. It does clearly carry over to the academic world, because if you look at UNLV and what their strongest programs are, it's obviously hotel management, business program, stuff like that. So I think there is a link and something of a carryover. I think we just need, obviously, more diversity in the community and to be a little more well-rounded academically on campus.
We are asking what's on your mind, and we're talking about the smarts that exist here in Las Vegas. We're talking about that with Bo Bernard, Executive Director for the International Gaming Institute at UNLV, who did a TED Talk a while back saying Las Vegas is, in fact, contrary to what some people might think, a very smart city. Also with us, Cindy Reed, Arts and Entertainment Editor from Vegas 7, Matt O'Brien, who is the author of Beneath the Neon and My Week at the Blue Angel, and Steve Sebelius, columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal.
Our understanding of intelligence is bending in the direction of Las Vegas. An intelligent brain is a social brain. A social brain is a hospitality brain. A hospitality brain is a Las Vegas brain. And Las Vegas is smart.
That's Professor Bo Bernard, Executive Director of the International Gaming Institute at UNLV, who's speaking at a TED Talk about how Las Vegas really is a smart place. And that is what we are talking about with our panel today. Bo Bernard is part of the panel. So is Matt O'Brien, the author of Beneath the Neon and My Week at the Blue Angel, Cindy Reed, Arts and Entertainment Editor at Vegas 7, and Steve Sebelius, columnist for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. And we want you to be a part of this conversation as well. Talking about smarts and the kind of smarts that are here in Las Vegas and that intelligence, well, what do you make of it? Are we, in fact, a very smart city, as Bo Bernard claimed in his TED Talk? Or do you think there are some things we need to do to become a really smart city? 702-258-3552 is our number, 702-258-3552 or knprnews.org. Now, Bo Bernard, you talked about how the Las Vegas Strip is sort of the ultimate social intelligence. On the other hand, I spent the 90s in Pittsburgh, and in talking about like a one-industry, one-focused town, Pittsburgh was that until the 1980s when the steel industry pretty much died there. They have had to redefine themselves, and they've done a really good job of it, but there are exceptions to that. There are a lot of other cities that didn't do so well, but Pittsburgh has become an educational
medical hub,
exactly. Detroit might be at the other end of the spectrum, where they may never recover from the last 10 or 20 years or so. So isn't there a danger in being too specialized?
There is, and I think you hit on it right there. The difference between Detroit and Pittsburgh, to oversimplify, is Pittsburgh has figured out a way to reinvent itself, as you mentioned, and as Steve mentioned, the importance of investing in education. We have a beautiful case study in Pittsburgh right now, and the way in which that medical community related to that educational community has evolved. They've done a fantastic job. Again, Las Vegas has reinvented itself in sort of an intra way, right? We've reinvented our product as it pertains to what the world sort of experiences as it comes to Las Vegas. But I don't think any of us would argue against the diversification, right? I think you can do, Governor Sandoval's fond of using the phrase, watering the green spots, right? You can continue to water the green spots that are flourishing. But I think you also need to look at ways in which we can diversify and obviously add other sectors of the economy and reinvent in the way that Pittsburgh has and continue to reinvent in the way that Las Vegas has.
Our number is 702-258-3552. Sam joins us from Las Vegas. Sam, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi. You're on the air.
Hey. So one of the areas I feel like Las Vegas could really provide some competition against even our neighbor California is engineering and programming, specifically for console gaming, computer gaming, and even slot machine gaming. I work in the slot game industry, and I work a lot with programmers and engineers, and I'm also involved with tech. The biggest hurdle that a lot of us have in that sector is that we don't want to raise our kids here because the education system is just not that great. And so one of the things I think Vegas could do to really start drawing in the new sectors of people is provide a strong family situation here for people so they don't feel like they need to leave to get that quality education for their kids. And kind of start taking over some of the tech industry that's over in California. I think that would really benefit Vegas.
What do you think we need to do to be able to move into that area a little bit more, Sam?
Right now, people are already coming back. But as soon as they're back and then they start their families, they leave because, you know, consistently throughout, it's been, I just don't want my kids to have to go through the public school system and I can't afford the private schools. What they could do is if they focus on, you know, revamping our education system, figured out why things are failing. It's not always the money. Sometimes it's just teachers aren't qualified to be teaching. They don't understand. So I've run into situations where teachers thought that they were teaching really well, but they did studies that show that the students really just weren't grasping the materials with the way that they were teaching. There's a whole bunch of different problems depending on what school you're at, depending on what teachers you get. It's a little bit more complicated. I'm not educated enough in all of the situations to be able to provide a straight answer, but that's what I've seen.
All right. Sam, thanks very much. Really appreciate the call. 702-258-3552. 702-258-3552. Bo Bernard?
I just hear, Sam, right? I mean, we're all singing from the same hymn book. One of the ways in which we're seeing hopefully some innovation on campus in the sphere that Sam references, we actually, and this is one small gesture perhaps, but we have a Center for Game Innovation now, whereby the students are creating new games, new gambling game ideas. And again, back to this point of the product evolving in Las Vegas, you look at the conventional slot player and it's an aging player. There are challenges to develop new kinds of products. Dr. Mark Yoseloff, who actually has a PhD in math from Princeton, where he was a cohort of John Nash, the beautiful mind guy, then was CEO of ShuffleMaster, where he had over 100 game patents, is now teaching courses at the university on how to invent new games that are now themselves being patented and churned out.
Now, I should say full disclosure, by the way, we are going to have a conversation with him next week about that very subject, which is
terrific.
Quite interesting.
Yeah, it's again, it's another sort of point that reveals the innovation here. But again, as Sam points out, this is the kind of thing that we need. I think most of us who've lived here for a long time have moments where we get really sad when the community loses a smart person and you find yourself super depressed as somebody has the experience that Sam just described, and also excited when somebody comes here and actually feels at home and feels comfortable and finds their niche and you get sort of that level of happiness. Yeah, this is the kind of thing that those of us who have been here a long time are quite familiar with, this sentiment that Sam expresses, and that those of us in education, this is part of our job is to address that.
Matt O'Brien?
Yeah, I thought the caller brought up a good point. We're looking at ways to diversify, to bring more people here, and we're having some success with that downtown with the tech industry, but maybe it's time to start looking at how to keep those people here, because that is going to become important over the long term.
Is that going to be something where we've got to be able to say, yes, and your kids will thrive here as well? And we're not really able to say that right now?
Yeah, I think so. If we want to be the kind of town, and maybe in some ways we don't, but that where families come and stay here for many, many years, we have to address some of the issues in the community.
This makes me think, Cindy Reed, of more than a decade ago, when Las Vegas began to kind of abandon the whole family-friendly thing, which we ended up dropping that in favor of what happens here stays here. Is there any way we can make those two things happen side by side? Or are we just kind of doomed to be what happens here stays here and not a lot else?
I mean, I think they already do happen side by side, where you have the Strip and then you have the whole community that lives outside of the Strip and interacts with it in a controlled, limited way. So you don't have people, the locals are perhaps working in a nightclub but not taking their children to the nightclub at the same time. I think in terms of this look at technological growth, if you want to look at Austin as kind of a similar city, they've had that very type of success we're looking for, but they've also, in consequence of that, had explosive population growth. And I wonder, at what point do we have to consider that we are in a desert and there is limited water? So how will that eventually play into the type of growth we're looking for? Can we really sustain to have a whole new industry move here?
Our number is 702-258-3552, and Marty is next in Las Vegas. Marty, thanks for calling. Yeah. Welcome.
Thank you. I was calling up because I think both sides are kind of amorphous in what they're defining as intelligence. I think the professor's side of the ledger speaks for itself. It's just very amorphous. But on the other side, the more traditional side, the high SAT score, IQ type measurement, they're not talking about creativity. I think, as an example, there might be somebody that gets a 700 on his verbal college board, but actually would have gotten a lot higher because some of the questions to a creative person can be very vague. He might pick the second most correct answer because he's thinking of things that nobody else would be thinking of. Also, high IQ people can be adoptive as well as relatively uneducated people. You don't think a doctor or a lawyer could man a hospitality desk? I think they could. They might require the minimum training, what are the alternatives to present to the customer, or how to run the computers at the desk there. But I think we're making too much out of the non-standard type of intelligence measurement.
All right. Marty, thank you very much for your call. Steve Sebelius, doctor or lawyer, could man the hospitality desk, maybe not a journalist or columnist.
Well, I'm sure they could. The question is, why would they do that?
Well, somebody with that level of intelligence or in effect, knowledge, if you want to say it that way.
You know, Cindy said earlier, people should do what makes them happy. And I think people gravitate to fields that they have an interest in and they have skills in. Somebody who is very analytical would probably gravitate towards being a lawyer. Somebody who's very social would probably gravitate more towards a hospitality industry. It does take a skill set to, for example, be a host at a nightclub or a casino host. I mean, that is a relationship business, and that takes a skill set that maybe somebody who does the job of a lawyer or a doctor does not have those skills to do. So I don't know that they're as interchangeable as Marty suggests. I don't know necessarily if that's something you can translate to.
Yeah. Matt O'Brien.
Yeah, I think hospitality has maybe more to do with personality than intelligence. And I think there's certain personalities that would be good at that. And there are certain doctors and lawyers who may not have the right personality to excel at hospitality. So I think there's a distinction to be made.
Jim joins us next from Las Vegas. Jim, thanks for calling and welcome to the program.
Thank you. My comment is I don't think we have a trained, skilled workforce for the type of technological and other industries that we're trying to attract. My recommendation would be to find out our strengths, focus on that, and build out on that, and quit wasting effort in things that won't produce good results. I can give you an example in the technology area real quick. In Tucson, IBM built an electronic assembly facility that would hire 2,500 local people. Then they found they didn't have the trained, skilled people in Tucson, and they closed it down.
And yet, Jim, Tucson's a college town. It's a very big college town, University of Arizona.
You're right. And their college, their university, is highly rated too, mm-hmm. In medicine and a few other things. That's why I'm saying, if we focus and build out on our strengths, like the law school, hospitality, things like that, and get that, top rated into the national ratings and rankings, which we're not in. We're in some obscure local Northwest rating system that doesn't mean a heck of a lot. But we're not even in the national ratings and rankings for universities and colleges. So I think we should build on our strengths first and then gradually build into new areas.
All right, Jim, thank you very much for your call. Bo Burnham, I'll give you a quick chance to respond before a break.
Sure. I have two professorships. One is in the sociology department, one's in hotel. So I can speak to the hotel school. And it actually, the line that we use is one that's relevant to our conversation here. We're either number one or number two in the country behind or in front of Cornell over in Ithaca, New York. And the line we've long used is that a Cornell kid's going to have a higher SAT score, but you can't put them in the front desk on day one at the Bellagio and expect them to excel. The UNLV kids, all of whom have 1,000 hours in the field by virtue of getting a degree from the hospitality program, are people who are quite used to interacting with who knows what will walk into that door, right? And as such, have a different kind of skill, a different kind of intelligence. Again, I think the conversation on intelligence is really becoming a conversation on intelligences, plural, right? Whereby things like creativity, things like social intelligence, things like conventionally measured sort of IQ, all are a part of this conversation, but different forms are important in different settings.
Now, at the same time, can you see a difference between the UNLV grads and the Cornell grads in executive positions?
It's a good question, and one that we actually think about quite a bit during faculty mm-hmm. meetings. Certainly, we're overrepresented in the executive positions up and down Las Vegas Boulevard, and just as importantly, in the tech sector sector, the gaming tech sector that's back behind the airport, back behind 215. But globally, the Marriott executives tend to come from Cornell, and that's something that we need to get better at. Mm.
We are talking about intelligence and asking the question, is Las Vegas a smart city? Now, Bo Bernard claimed it was during a TED Talk, and we thought this is something worth talking about. So Bo Bernard is with us. He is the executive director for the International Gaming Institute at UNLV. Also with us, Cindy Reed, arts and entertainment editor with Vegas 7, Steve Sebelius, columnist for the Review Journal, and Matt O'Brien, author of Beneath the Neon and My Week at the Blue Angel. It's kind of a variation on our What's on Your Mind series, and we are talking with Bo Bernard, executive director for the International Gaming Institute at UNLV. He recently did a TED Talk where he said in the TED Talk that we are a very smart city. Also with us, Steve Sebelius, columnist with the Las Vegas Review Journal, Matt O'Brien, author of books including Beneath the Neon, Life and Death in the Tunnels of Las Vegas, and Cindy Reed, arts and entertainment editor at Las Vegas 7. We'd like to hear from you, too, and hope you'll join us. 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. Scott's next in Las Vegas. Scott, welcome.
Hey, welcome to you. I'm not going to claim that I'm going to make a particularly logical argument here because I'm just one of those emotionally intelligent guys or socially intelligent guys. But I got to throw some flies in the ointment here. I've been that guy in the wait, and I've been that waiter. I've done that stuff. I've never been a hostess, so I know it's hard to imagine, but we can't compare a lawyer and a hostess. We're talking about different realities, guys. We have a city here that runs on people who are uneducated, who have very little motivation except to do what, you know, the 5 feet in front of them. I just came from McDonald's, and the gal who served me, nice girl, socially brilliant, big smile on her face. She could barely speak English, guys. I'm not talking about some ethnic thing here. I'm talking about a gal who couldn't string a sentence together that it's bloody scary. Mm-hmm. And I hear you guys sort of saying, hey, it's cool because we're nice folks. Well, jeepers creepers, we're competing against a world where...
Yeah, competing. Yeah. Well, competing against the world, and as you say, some of us are not quite ready to do that level of competition. Cindy Reed.
Well, I'm not good at math, but statistically, half of the human population is below average intelligence, and we need a society and community that serves all citizens, not just the best. And so, that there is a place for people of all education levels and skill sets is one of the best parts about Las Vegas.
All right, Scott, thanks very much for your call, 702-258-3552. Matt O'Brien, you wanted to add something, too.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference from the service you would get at McDonald's on West Tropicana versus the kind of service we're talking about on the Strip. But I do have to say, listening to Dr. Bernhardt's talk, I did think about all the kind of bad hospitality experiences that I've had here on the Strip and off the Strip. And sometimes I'm surprised in a city that's known for being so hospitable how bad the service can be at times. But I think this city can get away with it. Most people don't come here for great hospitality necessarily. So even if they have a bad experience, they can enjoy gambling, going to the clubs, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Steve Sebelius?
I was just going to say that, Scott, his example doesn't really hold because I've read decisions of the United States Supreme Court. These are presumably with some of the most highly educated lawyers in the nation, and some of them can't string a sentence together, at least not one that makes sense. I will not name names, but I'm just saying it's all the way around.
Yes, it goes around, doesn't it?
Can I jump on Matt's point? We've all had horrible hospitality experiences in Las Vegas. I think the broader point, when you look at the overall population of workers, I was talking with Artie Nathan, who hired everybody Steve Wynn hired for years and years and years as his HR guru, and he gives people a hug test. He believes that people who hug well, who have not sort of they don't sort of recoil at that moment, are people who tend to do well on the social intelligence metrics and tend to respond well. And those are the folks who tend to have long careers in hospitality. As Matt points out, there are plenty of folks who are not so good at it. And in the same way that people wash out of Wall Street if they're not numbers smart, in the same way that people don't last long in Silicon Valley if they're not tech savvy. Again, if you're not socially savvy, as some of the folks that Matt and all of us have interacted with, you don't last long. You don't have a long career in hospitality.
Cindy Reed, the hug test?
So I have a friend who's a dealer here in town, and he passes the hug test with flying colors. He is one of the most socially savvy people I've ever met. And I think one thing we need to make sure is that that hug test is serving our community, because he's a dealer, but he's not able to have a full-time job. He's working two poker rooms. He's splitting his time, working round the clock, shifts that are here and there. And so he's one of the most socially savvy people. He's fantastic at what he does. But for whatever reason, the system is not serving all of us.
702-258-3552 is our number. Chris is next in Las Vegas. Chris, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
You know, I hear people saying socially savvy. I don't think that's the issue. I mean, you could teach anyone to be nice, or when, hey, someone comes in, to smile. The reason I'm saying that is because before the end of the school year, I was teaching a creative writing class for one of the organizations that works in the community. And I was going to different schools, and I'm talking about 6th, 7th, 8th, even 9th graders writing at a third grade level. I would literally have to show you their work for you to believe it. And to me, it's the ability to make the connection mentally, to be able to solve problems, to put two and two together. And I think more often than not, these young folks and some of these older folks can't do it. They're unable to do that. And for me, that is a huge red flag. When you have all of these 10th graders that can name all the Kardashians but can't name the last 6 presidents and don't understand why that's a problem, I see that as a huge issue that's going on. So intelligent-wise, I think we got a whole lot of work to do.
Got some work to do. Chris, thanks very much for the call. Bo Bernard, something that Chris was saying a moment ago piques my interest as well. Are we, as we get these kids who've got this kind of social intelligence that you're speaking of, does that translate into problem solving when you're dealing with hospitality and there, you know, there is some issue that comes up perhaps?
Probably depends on the type of problem, right? Mm-hmm. Probably people problem solving. If you're socially intelligent, you can figure that out. But as it pertains to a logical question that you might get on the LSAT, for example, and figuring out some of the game sections and some of those tests, that's probably a different form of intelligence. But what do I know? I can't name the last 6 Kardashians.
Matt O'Brien.
I was going to say, in this new service-based economy that's spreading worldwide, as Dr. Bernhard pointed out, maybe knowing the Kardashians is more important than knowing the past 6
God help us.
Presidents in some ways.
So, I got to ask all of you, have you ever done, and one of our producers, Amy Kingsley, says, have you guys done any jobs like serving, waiting on tables and such? Because I didn't do that. I mean, I was the dishwasher in the restaurant, but I'm not sure if there's any more complex job than doing serving a bunch of tables at once.
I like the part of Dr. Bernhard's talk when he mentioned the hug test, because my thought was I would totally fail that. So I know to stay away from that type of job.
Cindy Reed?
I was a hostess at a restaurant in high school, and it was one of the favorite jobs that I've ever had. Unfortunately, there is a limit to how far a restaurant hostess can take you, so I had to find a different career ultimately.
But have you worked in any jobs that involve juggling more things at once?
As a magazine editor, yes, I have.
Fair enough. So, but no servers in the room, apparently.
I worked for tips in high school as well. It's hard work, as Las Vegans can attest.
And it does demand some social intelligence.
And it demands some social intelligence. That's how you get those tips.
So as we move forward with Las Vegas, as the recovery continues to kind of roll out bit by bit and such, and we start looking ahead, what should we be striving for? I mean, Bob, I'll start with you. What should we try to become? If we're going to be an intelligent community, what's the next level of intelligence to which we should aspire?
So I think Las Vegas – this sounds contradictory, but I'll explain. I think Las Vegas is an intellectual capital, and it must become an intellectual capital. It is an intellectual capital of the conventional brick-and-mortar casino industry that's evolved into what we now call an integrated resort industry. And we often point to Macau and how Macau's revenues are seven times those of Las Vegas. And yet, where do they turn for creativity and for the sort of invention that is the modern mega resort, as Steve referenced? They turn to Las Vegas. Singapore turned to Las Vegas to build iconic things. We're very much still an intellectual capital of that global industry. But the product's changing. And in much the same way that the movie theater industry had to evolve or die, and in many cases it's died, when we went from sort of cathedrals of movie consumption to watching movies on our phones, right now gambling is moving from something we consume in massive cathedrals of gambling consumption.
It's moving to our phones as well, bit by bit.
So we need to become that intellectual capital of that.
Bob Renard is executive director of the International Gaming Institute at UNLV. Matt O'Brien teaches writing. He's also the author of Beneath the Neon and My Week at the Blue Angel. Steve Sebelius is a columnist with the Las Vegas Review Journal, and Cindy Reed's arts and entertainment editor at Vegas 7. Thank you all very much for being with us today.
Thank you.